So today we're talking about karma, which means action. And it refers to our physical, verbal, and mental activities. So physical actions that we do with our body, verbal ones refer to all of the communication we do, not just the verbal communication, but also this and this. Okay? And then mental action refers to our thoughts, how we direct our thoughts. Okay? So we're acting all the time in one way or another. And all of our actions have some kind of intention behind them. And the quality of that intention influences greatly the result, the effect of that action, and also the value of the action. So here we're going to talk about virtue or wholesome actions, non-virtue or destructive or unwholesome actions. And these are all differentiated according to the result that they bring. So the Buddha simply described how karma functions. He didn't make up the law of karma. Okay? It's just a natural system of causality, much the same way that physics has its system of causality, as does chemistry and biology and psychology and so on. But the karmic system of causality really relates to our ethical conduct and specifically to what we experience as a result of the ethical or unethical actions that we do. So the whole idea of karma is that, well, a few main ideas about it. One is that we are responsible for our own actions. So often, what I find in life is we take responsibility for things that are not our responsibility, and we don't take responsibility for things that are our responsibility. I don't know if you've noticed this in yourself or in life in general, but I really find that. For example, okay, maybe a friend or a relative is unhappy about something, and we say, oh, it's my fault. I did this and this and this, and I made them unhappy. I'm so guilty. I'm so bad because whatever this was. Well, actually, we're not responsible for how the other person feels. We're responsible for the quality of our action. But we can't control how other people feel about our actions. Because sometimes we do something with a kind motivation and people get upset. Does that mean that we should feel bad and guilty and I'm a failure because somebody else is unhappy? No. Okay. What other people feel is their business. We're responsible for our actions and our intentions. Of course, if we have the intention to hurt their feelings, we're responsible for our intention. But we're not responsible for what they feel because we can't crawl inside of somebody else and make them feel a certain way. Okay. So this whole thing of feeling guilty because somebody else is unhappy and thinking that we should be able to make other people always happy, that's not very realistic. Yeah. Can you make other people happy all the time? Can anybody make you happy all the time? Try it that way first. Yeah. nobody can make us happy all the time because nobody else controls our mind and our feelings, only we do. If we want to be happy, we have to change the way we think and we have to change our emotions. That's our job, that's not someone else's job. Okay? So similarly, feeling like, oh, I'm a bad person because somebody's unhappy with what I'm doing. If we did what we're doing with a good intention, we did not make that other person unhappy. Their way of thinking did. Okay, so we're responsible for our motivation and our actions, but we can't control what they do. So that's what I meant by we take responsibility for things that aren't our responsibility. Okay? I hope that makes some sense to people. Huh? Is that making some sense to you? Yeah, for people that experience a lot of guilt, this is a real big one that you have to work with. Yeah, to tease apart what's my part in it and what's the other person's part. Meanwhile, we don't take responsibility for things that are our responsibility. Okay? So we say things like, what that other person did made me so angry. Yeah, we say that. Like, they made me angry. Yeah. I have no responsibility for my anger. They're the cause of my anger. They made me angry. Did somebody else really make you angry? How did they make you angry? Yeah, they said some words. They did some actions. Did you catch anger like you catch the flu from them? They made you angry? Their words are coming, the sound waves are coming, and they hit your ear, and then bang, anger. They made you angry? I don't think so. Why do we get angry? Because we have the seed of anger inside of ourselves. Other people are just the external condition. They say or do something, and we respond with anger. And when we get angry, we blame it on them. That's not very fair. They didn't always intend to make us angry. Yeah. Do you really think that people sit around in the morning and go, who shall I make angry today? Oh, I remember so-and-so. I think I'll go see them and make them angry. I don't think people do that. People just live their lives. We get angry at some things that they do because of the way we describe their behavior to ourselves. Okay. Let me give you an example. I had a friend and her son was marrying somebody from another culture, and the other family was having a big kind of family get together, and of course they've invited her. She was going to be their daughter's new mother-in-law. And my friend walked into this big party, and her future daughter-in-law was talking to somebody. And my friend looked and thought, oh, she's there talking to somebody. I walked in the room and she didn't even stand up and come over and say hello to me. My son's marrying this girl who's so inconsiderate, who's so selfish, who doesn't even say hello to her fiancé's mother, who she knows doesn't know anybody else at this party. And my friend got really, really mad. Yeah. Okay. So then we asked her, because we were doing some exercises one day, we asked her, okay, tell us just the facts of what happened. Okay. And the bare fact was, she said, I walked into a room, she was talking, and she continued to talk. That's all that happened. Everything else, this girl's so rude, she's so selfish, she doesn't care about me, you know, look how she's treating her future mother-in-law, she knows I don't know. All of that stuff was her interpretation of what she thought her future daughter-in-law was doing. But she didn't know if any of that was what the other woman intended to do or not. She just made up this story because she herself felt uncomfortable walking into a room where she didn't know people. Okay. Are you getting what I'm saying? That the daughter-in-law didn't make my friend angry. She was facing the other way. She didn't see my friend come in the room. Yeah. This wasn't like she looked at her future mother-in-law. It registered and then she turned away and, you know, deliberately did something else. That wasn't what happened. Okay. So, you know, in these kind of situations, we see what actually lies behind our anger is how we describe the situation to ourselves. Okay? So other people don't make us angry. We have a choice whether we become angry or not. We usually don't take that choice. We usually say, well, anybody in this situation would get angry. But that's not necessarily true. I've been in situations where two people experience the same situation in very different ways because of the way they describe the event to themselves, even though they're both sitting there in the same place. Okay. So, to link this back to the idea of karma, when we really think about karma, and how it's taught and applied to our lives, we begin to see more clearly what is our responsibility and what isn't. And in doing that, we realize that we are in the process of creating our own future. And so we actually have a lot of ability and a lot of power to create the kind of future we want to have if we are responsible for our own actions. Okay? And really look at our own actions carefully. So usually we don't actually look at our own actions so carefully. I don't know about you, but very often a thought comes in my mind and I just act on it. Yeah? In Buddhism, what they say is the real value of any action we do is our intention, our motivation. But when we don't really stop and are, when we're not even sometimes aware of why we're doing something, then it becomes difficult to create virtue because we're not even aware of our intention, let alone being able to differentiate a virtuous intention from a non-virtuous one. Okay? Instead, we just kind of operate on automatic. Yeah? Do you see that sometimes in your life? You know, you get up in the morning, We all have our own little morning rituals, brush your teeth, eat breakfast, whatever you do. Yeah. Get in some kind of transportation, whether it's a bus or a metro or a car or something, bicycle, and we go to work. Do you ever, and you do this every morning, except maybe Saturday and Sunday, do you ever think in the morning, why am I going to work? Yeah. You spend so many hours of your life at work. Why are you going to work? What's our intention? What are we trying to get out of going to work? What are we trying to do? Are we just doing it because, well, everybody in society gets up and goes to work, so I better do like everybody else? Because if I don't do it, people are going to think something's wrong with me. Or do you just think, why do I go to work? Well, I need to support myself and my family. So I go to work to earn money and that's it. If you think like that, like I'm only going to work to earn money, you're not going to enjoy your job very much. If you think, I'm going to work so I can be successful and become famous in my own field, you're going to have an awful lot of stress at your job because your whole mind is going to be geared on getting recognition. And I need to meet the right people who will praise me, and I need to sell myself so that other people will think I'm knowledgeable, and I need to get invited to all the special blah blah things in my field so that I know people and they know my name. Yeah, is that the reason you go to work all day? Really? You're going to be pretty miserable if that's the reason for your job, because are you ever going to get to the state where you feel you are properly appreciated in your field? If your job is, you know, your motivation is I want to become famous and well-known in my field, how do you know when you reach that? And will you ever be satisfied? Or no matter how famous you are, there's all these competitors of people who are going to be just as famous as you are. Or maybe more famous.
Oh, no.
Okay. And then our whole life is spent in competition. Our life is spent in extolling our own good qualities and putting down other people's good qualities because we want everybody to know that we are the top notch. We're going to be pretty miserable and we spend a lot of time at work. Okay. So you have to think. Or, you know, maybe you're just going to work to get money to support your family and to save for old age. How are you going to know when you have enough money? Yeah, how are you going to know when you feel financially secure? My experience in watching other people is at the beginning, they want X amount of money. As soon as they make X amount, they still feel financially insecure and they need to make more. They need Y amount and they make that and they need more, they need it higher. Yeah. So you get all these people, like all the people in Silicon Valley, all the dot-com people, yeah, who invent all these things and they're billionaires by age 30. And they keep making tons of money. Why? Why? They have so much already. They have fame already. Why? Okay. So, what for us to look at our motivations, our intentions, because that's what's going to determine the value of what we do, not whether other people approve or disapprove of our action. And the real value is coming from what is our motivation in doing it. And so, if we experience, well, so our job is to watch our motivation. Yeah? And also in the process, to realize that in the past, we were not so careful about our motivation. And we often acted either on automatic or really with very reckless and selfish motivations. And that the seeds of those actions are still on our mind stream, and they're going to influence the situations that we encounter now. So, for example, I'll tell you the story of how this book got written. Good Karma is, it's a commentary I wrote on a poem by Dharmarakshita, who was a great Indian sage. He lived about a millennium ago, and he wrote this text called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons, which describes a lot the kind of actions we do and what their results are, and the kind of intentions we have, and how unaware of those intentions we are. And he makes us aware of those intentions, so which gives us power to change them, because some of them are pretty rotten intentions. So I, became aware of this whole thing of how my motivations and intentions and actions create what I experience, through reading this poem, okay? And that made me become more aware of my own motivations, because then I knew that what I'm doing is creating the cause for what I will experience. So when I first learned about Buddhism, it was in the States, and I came to India and Nepal after that, because there weren't very many Dharma centers in the U.S. at that time where I could learn. And so I was staying at Kapan Monastery in Nepal, and I got hepatitis, Hep A, which is caused by a virus that spreads when food, specifically fruits and vegetables, are not properly washed. So if you've ever had Hep A, you will know what I'm feeling like, what I felt like then. I had like zero energy, I was so sick, I just laid there. And someone brought me this thin little book about the Wheel of Sharp Weapons, which had this poem in it and a very short commentary by one of my teachers, Geshe Nawan Darge. And I read the booklet, and I came across verse 9, which I will read to you. Okay, so there I am, can't move, really sick, lying on the floor, mad at the people who worked in the kitchen because they didn't wash the fruits and vegetables well enough, and that's why I got hep. Okay, so I'm mad at them, I'm sick. And then I read this verse, which says, when my body falls prey to unbearable illness, it is the weapon of destructive karma returning on me for injuring the bodies of others. From now on, I will take all sickness upon myself. So I read this verse, I said, what's the story here? Okay, so the first line, when my body falls prey to unbearable illness. Okay, that I can accept. I was feeling unbearable illness. Okay. Then, what does Dharma Rakshita say next? It is the weapon of destructive karma returning on me. In other words, the principal cause for my illness was my own karma, actions that I had done either earlier in this life, probably in previous lives, and now, and those actions were non-virtuous, I hadn't purified them, and now they are ripening in my illness. So when it says the weapon of destructive karma returning on me, it's like our actions are like a boomerang, you know? I think they used it in Africa somewhere.
Australia,
that's right. You throw a weapon out and it comes back to you. So it's the same idea, you know? We put energy out into the universe and that comes back at us. Okay, so I was sick, so clearly what I had put out into the universe was not virtue, was not kindness. What was it? The third line says, injuring the bodies of others. Oh, I injured the bodies of others. First thing my mind did was say, I didn't injure anybody's body. No, I'm innocent. And then I remembered as a child swatting flies and taking great glee at swatting flies and piling up snails and squishing them, thinking that I was stopping them from destroying the flowers in the garden. Yeah. And spraying rained on ants, so that they didn't crawl into the house. And I thought, okay. And then, the big thing I remembered, my 21st birthday, you know, in America anyway, you celebrate your 21st birthday. So my friends took me out to a seafood restaurant, very expensive place, because we were celebrating. And what we did, we had a lobster dinner. So you pick out your lobster, and then they put the live lobster into the boiling water and cook it. And I realized, oh my goodness, we were celebrating my 21st birthday, but I created incredible destructive karma in the process of celebrating something. And that, you know, that could very well be the cause for my illness now. I never did that again. Yeah, I can't imagine the pain that the lobster experienced being put into boiling water. Yeah, and have great regret for that. But even in past lives, you know, we don't know what we did in our past lives. They say that we've been everything and done everything in a past life. So maybe I was a soldier in a past life and killed a lot of the enemy troops. Or maybe I was an exterminator. Or maybe I was a guard in prison who enacted the death penalty. Or maybe I punched someone in the face in a fight with the intention to really injure them. I don't know what I did specifically, and the specific action isn't important. It's the general thing of, wow, I somehow really damaged somebody else's body. And here's the result of it that I'm experiencing. So there's no reason for me to be mad at the cook and the people who work in the kitchen. Because it's my action that was the principal cause for my my present situation. And so I need to bear the suffering that I'm experiencing now without being angry, without blaming others, without having a pity party and making everyone feel sorry for me, without complaining. Because I'm simply experiencing the result of my own bad actions. So if I respond to this situation by anger and being self-centered and blaming and, you know, complaining to everybody, then I'm creating more negative karma, which is going to bring me more suffering. If I realize, okay, this is the experience of what I did, and so now I need to do some purification practice, then what I do is going to be for my own good, because I'll be doing some purification, which will stop other negative karma that I've created from ripening. So I was there, lying on the floor, sick, and I started, you know, doing mantra recitation and having regret for my own non-virtue. The whole experience of hepatitis, looking at it now, I think it was a real benefit to me, to my Dharma practice, yeah? Because after that, instead of thinking, I should practice virtue, it was, I want to practice virtue. Yeah, because I really saw the link between my actions and the result. And also, while I was sick, there were so many people who were kind to me. And normally, I just take other people's kindness for granted. Yeah, oh, I'm sick. Yeah, you cook for me, you bring me medicine, you clean up after me. Yeah, I'm the sick person, everybody else is my waiter and waitress. Yeah, and just, you know, felt entitled to kindness. But understanding karma stopped that feeling of entitlement and feeling like I was a spoiled brat, basically. And it made me instead think, wow, here I am, I'm sick, and all these people are kind to me. And it was so shocking to me when I really looked at the number of people who were kind. And then I had to link it to, that's a result of the virtuous karma I had created in the past. So here I am, I'm experiencing the unpleasant result of my non-virtue, but the very pleasant result of some virtue created in the past too. So it made me really think, you know, how complex our life is, the causation factors for all the different things that happen in our life. Because in one event we can experience pain and pleasure, can't we? And it made me see that, you know, how I responded to that was, to the situation of being sick, was, you know, either I'm going to perpetuate my negative karma by complaining and so on, or I'm going to cut it right there by just bearing the suffering and thinking that actually, it could have been much worse suffering. Now, I could have been in a car crash, or a plane crash, or I could have had some life-threatening disease and that actually killed me. Or that negative karma could have ripened in a very, very unfortunate rebirth where I would have experienced a great deal of pain for a long time. So when I thought about how else my negative karma could have ripened, then I thought, actually, you know, I got off kind of easy. Yeah? Being sick is not, it's not the end of the world. You're sick, you rest, you get better, life goes on. So, and then, you know, my teachers were saying, when you view at adversity like that, then just having that view acts as purification. When you think, I'm experiencing the result of my own negativity, and now that karma's finishing, it could have ripened in really big problems, it didn't. What I have now is unpleasant, but it's actually quite manageable compared to what a lot of other people are going through. So I will take this situation as part of my spiritual practice and see it as purification of my own negative karma. And then when you think like that, that completely changes your mind. That completely changes your mind. It's not a big deal. Okay. I'll tell you of another situation where I practiced like that. And again, where I had experienced the result of my own negative karma. So this was in 1987. And I was on a pilgrimage in Tibet. I was with a few other people, some Tibetans, and then two other Westerners. And we were going to Lama Lhotso, the very famous lake where they, you know, they look in it and they see the images that help them find the next Dalai Lama. So we were making pilgrimage to this lake on horseback, okay? So I had a very sweet horse. She was really very sweet. Yeah, they gave me a nice horse, thank goodness. Because I hadn't ridden a horse in about 20 years. And, you know, anyway. So my horse was very cooperative. There was another person on the trip whose horse was not so cooperative. And his horse would, had to cross some streams, and his horse stopped in the middle of the stream and wouldn't move. So he was having a great deal of problem with his horse. And this was somebody who tends to be kind of temperamental. So I thought, you know, I'll offer to switch horses with him. You know, I'm fine riding a horse that stops in the middle of the stream. It won't bother me, eventually it'll move, but it was really bothering me. So I offered to switch horses with him. And I don't know why, but he got furious with me. He got so mad at me. Unbelievable. And he's sitting there on top of his horse. You did this and you did that, because we had worked together for many years in different Dharma centers and different places. He completely told me off. When we were here, you did this. When we were there, you did that. You're so uncooperative. You even worked with so-and-so, and she told me how hard it was to work with you. You're just selfish, on and on and on. He just really gave it to me, and I'm like, what did I do? I just offered to change horses, you know. He was so mad. And usually, I'm the kind of person, I don't like to be criticized. I don't know about you people, I don't like to be criticized. I want people to say, oh, children, you're so wonderful, you're so talented, you're so intelligent, you're so good, we like you so much. That's the kind of speech I like to hear. That wasn't what he was saying to me. He was saying the opposite, in a loud voice, repeatedly, because he was afraid I had short-term memory loss. And You know, and then I thought, you know, because we were on a pilgrimage, so I thought, oh, I better think something virtuous here, you know. And so I thought, oh, this is just the wheel of my karma returning upon me. Clearly, I have criticized other people. Okay. And if I look, I have to admit, yes, I've criticized other people. Actually, I've criticized many people. Very often, repeatedly. Not a day goes by, hardly, when I haven't criticized at least one, if not 10 people. So I've put a lot of that critical energy out into the world. Yeah. Is it any wonder that it's now coming back on me? I mean, actually, I don't get criticized every day, even though I criticize other people every day. So here somebody's criticizing me, why do I get upset? This is nothing compared to the amount of critical energy that I put out into the world. And so I did this meditation that we have in the Tibetan tradition, where we imagine taking on other people's suffering, using it to destroy our own self-centeredness and our own self-grasping ignorance. And then imagining giving our body, possessions, and merit away, transforming them into whatever any other people need, and giving all of that away. It's called the taking and giving meditation, or Tonglen in Tibetan. So I thought, okay, here we are in the middle of nowhere in Tibet, this guy's screaming at me, I better do this meditation. So I just did it, you know, and I thought, I'm going to take on all his suffering and give him my happiness, and take on his suffering and give him my happiness. So I just did this meditation, and by the time we got to where we were camping that evening, I was peaceful. My heart was peaceful. It was like, this is just the result of my karma, and, you know, I'm taking his suffering, destroying my own cause of suffering, my own selfishness and ignorance, and giving it, you know, imagining giving him happiness. So at the campsite, I was peaceful. And I thought, these Dharma methods, when you practice them, they work. Yeah? They change your mind. So what had been a very unpleasant situation, a ripening of my own negative karma, by being able to do this meditation and see the situation as the wheel of karma returning upon me, then I had cut that energy. Yeah, I had cut it and replaced it with some virtue. You know, normally, what I would have done when I get criticized. Okay. Now, some of us are exploders, and some of us are imploders when we're angry. And some of us do both, depending on the situation. I tend to be more of an imploder in the sense that when somebody gets angry at me, I just shut down and I'm quiet and I'm moody and I don't talk and I just give people icy shoulder and dirty looks and make sure everybody around me knows that I'm unhappy. That's what I usually do. Yeah. Other people, when they're angry, they explode. Maybe they would have told him off in an equally loud voice, sitting on horseback in the middle of a river. You know, I don't know. But what I did know is that by seeing the situation in terms of karma, it saved me from creating more negative karma by being angry, yeah, and moody, and saying lots and lots of unnice things to other people. Yeah. So, you know, in these kinds of situations, if we can change the way we look at something, our entire experience changes. Okay? Usually, when things are going well in our lives, we don't say, why me? Yeah. When you ate breakfast this morning, or lunch just recently, did you think, why do I have food to eat? Probably not. We usually think, oh, here's my food. Yeah. But if we don't have food to eat, because we're impoverished, then we would think, why don't I have food? So when things are going well, we don't think, what did I do to cause me to have so many good situations in my life? But when one small bad thing happens, then we say, what did I do to deserve this? The world is unfair. Is that true about you? Yeah, it's true about me. Yeah. My whole family, when something bad happened, what did I do to deserve this? And especially when we kids were naughty, my mother would say, what do I do to deserve you? Well, we'll tell you. Okay. But what I realize is, you know, when we have happiness, we never say, why me? We just take our happiness for granted. But when something unpleasant happens, we say, why me? And then, if we really want the answer, why me, we have to look in here and see the kind of things that we've done in the past that bring the unpleasant results that we experience. Let me read you some more. When my mind falls prey to suffering, it is the weapon of destructive karma returning upon me for definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others. From now on, I will take all suffering upon myself. Okay, so when my mind falls prey to suffering, okay, I'm unhappy, nothing really terrible has happened, but are sometimes you unhappy or you're in a bad mood anyway? Yeah, I have no energy, I'm depressed, I'm discouraged, oh, nobody loves me, everything in my life is going wrong. You know those days, or sometimes months, or whatever. So what's happening when my mind falls prey to suffering? It's the wheel of destructive karma turning upon me. So again, the primary cause for my mental unhappiness is actions that I've done in the past. Okay? Not how the world is treating me now, but actions that I've done in the past. What have I done for definitely causing turbulence in the hearts of others? Okay? What this means is I deliberately did things that I knew would make other people unhappy. Okay. So remember before I was saying we don't take responsibility for their unhappiness, but we need to take responsibility when we had a bad motivation and did something intentionally to inflict suffering. Well, here it is. You know, in the past, intentionally, with a bad motivation, I wanted to, you know, I made other people unhappy. So I have to confess. I don't know about you, But when I get jealous of somebody, I can be really nasty. I want them to suffer because they have what I should have. Yeah. Jealousy can't endure the well-being of somebody else. I should have that well-being. I should have that happiness. I should get the scholarship. I should get the promotion. I should have this, that, the other thing. So motivated by jealousy, sometimes deliberately inflicting mental suffering on others, ridiculing them, talking bad about them behind their back, all sorts of things. Yeah. Or maybe in an office situation, people spoke bad about me, so I wanted revenge. So what did? I talked badly about them and turned, you know, a working situation, create factions in an office. I talk bad about this person to all these people so that me and my group were one side and we really dump on this other person and create all sorts of drama in our workplace through our speech. Maybe I did something like that. Now, that's why I'm unhappy. So again, you know, deliberately wanting to cause turmoil in other people's lives. So again, what's the remedy? You know, I'm experiencing the result of my own negative karma. What's the remedy? From now on, I will take all suffering upon myself. So from now on, you know, I'll think of other people who have mental suffering like I do. Other people who have problems in their life, yeah, and the mental suffering that they experience. And I will imagine being able to take their suffering away from them, use it to destroy my own selflessness and my own ignorance. And then again, imagine giving my body, possessions, and merit away to them, transforming it into whatever they need. So when I'm mentally unhappy these days, I often think of the people in Aleppo, Syria. If you've been following the news in the last week, unbelievable, you know, what's going on. I mean, what if you follow the news for the last 5 years, the people in Aleppo, so much suffering. And I imagine, what must it be like living there, trying to raise a family, and there's no food, and, you know, forces, soldiers are preventing humanitarian aid to come into your area. How can another human being do that? For, you know, prevent civilians from receiving aid they need. And how would I feel, you know, trying to raise a family or provide, you know, for a family when there's no work, when if you go out to work, you're not sure you're going to live to come home in the evening. Or even if you live to come home in the evening, maybe your whole family is gone by the end of the day because of the bombs that have fallen on the house in civilian neighborhoods. I mean, I can't, just the, not even thinking of the physical suffering in a level, but the mental suffering of insecurity, of fear, the amount of fear they must experience, you know. And then I think, you know, my mental unhappiness, this is nothing. Yeah, compared to what those people are experiencing, my mental unhappiness, my little problem, it's easy. Yeah. And so that I find that very helpful for putting my suffering in context. Yeah. And here, mental suffering, okay. I created the principal cause, Let me now think of taking away other people's mental suffering. And when I think of their mental suffering, it's like my own pales before it. And then already I feel better. Kind of amazing how it works. Okay, so there's in this book, there's many verses that talk about different things that we've done. Okay? But right now, I think what I'll do is, because I've spoken for a while, is pause and give you a chance to ask some questions or make comments, and we can have a bit of a dialogue. Okay. I must say that here I focused on the unpleasant result and the negative karma we created, but also we should focus very strongly on the happy things we have going for us in our life and think of the good karma that we've created either earlier this life or in previous lives and rejoice in that good karma and make a determination to create more of it. So we have enough food for breakfast and lunch today. Why? Because we've practiced generosity in the past. So seeing the happy result, let's continue to be generous to other people. We have many friends who come and help us. Why? Because we've expressed kindness and we've gone out of our way to help others in the past. Seeing the good result, let's do more of that. And then, actually, when we're dealing with karma in this way, we're just thinking about it in terms of our lifetimes in samsara, in cyclic existence, we should also broaden our perspective and think that when I create good karma, instead of dedicating it just for my own personal happiness in cyclic existence, may I dedicate it, or I will dedicate it, make a strong determination. I will dedicate it, yeah, so that I can progress on the spiritual path and eventually purify my mind completely, develop all my inner Buddha potential, and attain full awakening. Okay? So not just to think, oh, I'm doing a good deed to get something in this life or my next life. But our ultimate purpose, the best way to do it, the ultimate purpose is for our own and others' spiritual awakening so that we can be of the greatest benefit to others and show them how to get out of this round of existence. So now we can have questions or comments or whatever.
Thank you for your talk. I was wondering about, I don't know how to phrase it properly as a question, but I'm thinking of collective and community karma, like situations of family where there are lots of illnesses, one after another, and the same with communities, well, just within Aleppo or regions of the world that come with suffering repeatedly and repetitively suffering. So if we try to understand the situations from the perspective of karma, how do you see that?
Okay. So situations not of just personal suffering, but where a whole group of people are experiencing suffering together. Yeah. In our lives, we create both individual karma and collective karma. So our individual karma is what we've been talking about so far. Our collective karma depends on what groups we participate in, what the purpose of the group is, and our attitude towards the group. Okay? So if we live in an impoverished area, it could be that maybe sometime in the past, together with those other people, yeah, we destroyed the food stores, a whole group of people. Like during a war, what enemy forces will do is they'll destroy the food. Or in the situation of Aleppo, you prevent food from reaching the population. So let's say those soldiers who worked together, the Syrian soldiers who worked together to prevent the humanitarian aid from reaching those people, they create collective karma by being a member of that group who is specifically motivated to do that deed and prevent the humanitarian aid. So if that karma is not purified, then they could be born together in the future in a place where there's great poverty. Or they could be a family that experiences a lot of one disaster after another, something like that. Okay? So, you know, we have to be careful what groups we join and how we relate to that group. And also be careful what we rejoice at. You know? So, for example, people who join an army, if the purpose is to kill the enemy, then even if they don't directly kill the enemy, but they're rejoicing that everybody else, that so many enemies were killed, and that's the reason why they joined the army, then they get that karma of killing themselves, and they could experience the result together with that whole platoon or, you know, group of soldiers. Okay? In the same way, when we create virtue, when you get together with a group of people, let's say, and you want to make a donation to a charity, or you get together with a group of people to sponsor a puja, then you're creating virtue together with that group of people, and then that could ripen, you know, in a group situation. Okay, does that make some sense? Yeah. So we have to be careful about the groups we join. Yeah. For example, in the state that I live in the US, which is Washington State in the Northwest, right now they have capital punishment. They haven't executed anybody in a while, but I remember a few years ago they did. And as a member of that state, if I agree with what the government I elected did by executing those people, then I create some collective karma with all those people in that state who say, yeah, capital punishment's good. But I don't believe in capital punishment. So even though I'm a citizen of that state, I made very specific effort on that day to think I do not agree with what this group of people is doing. I do not agree with this action. And I, you know, I have compassion for not only the person who's being executed, but also the people who are so ignorant that are going to perform the execution, and who rejoice at the execution. So even if you're a member of a group, you can also distance yourself from the karma that that group's creating. Okay. Similarly, when you see other people do something virtuous, if you rejoice at it, you create virtue as well. So they say that that's the easy person's way to create a lot of virtue, is to rejoice in other people's virtue. Because you don't even need to do anything yourself. You could just sit there and rejoice and think good thoughts about other people and rejoice at what they're doing. If you do this, your mind will be very happy. Yeah, you can see why it creates merit to do this. Other questions or comments?
In the creation of good karma, with the expectation that good karma will visit us. In a sense, it's transactional. The idea of creating good karma with no expectations at all, are they different?
Yeah. I mean, clearly, if our thought is, I'm creating some good karma because I want happiness, and it's the whole focus is me and my happiness, and the only reason I'm doing something good is so I can have happiness, there's something a little bit polluted in that. It's still good, but, there's something polluted. Whereas if we make ourselves so habituated to doing good because we really care about other people and because we really want to advance on the spiritual path, and we do actions like that more naturally simply because that virtuous motivation is really in our heart, then I think the results of that will be much faster than somebody who's kind of, I call it doing business with karma. Yeah. I'll do something good so I can get something back. Yeah.
So for the latter to happen, is there a stream of goodness that goes through you?
What do you mean by a stream of goodness?
So that you perform good karma naturally, as you say.
Okay. They say, one of the results of karma is the tendency to do that same action again. So if we make a habit, let's say, of generosity, or a habit of friendliness to others, or a habit of honesty in business dealings, then that could be what you call that stream of goodness. It's a habitual tendency that we build up in our own mind. Yeah. Also, what we could maybe call a stream of goodness is when we take certain ethical precepts. For example, in Buddhism there's a ceremony that we do where we can really pledge, I'm not going to kill or steal, have unwise or unkind sexual behavior, lie or take intoxicants. And in the ceremony you can promise in the presence of the Buddha and Bodhisattvas that you visualize that you won't do, these actions. And because of taking that promise and having that intention very strong in your mind, every moment that you're not acting counter to that intention, every moment you're not transgressing that precept, you're creating good karma. Yeah. Even without the thought in your mind of, I'm creating good karma now. Okay? Because of the power of that intention, and you took this precept for the rest of my life, I'm not going to do this. Okay?
Mm-hmm. At some point of time when you practice regularly, like this, do you lose your sense of self? Is it possible to lose your sense of self?
Okay, so at some time when you, if you practice consistently like this, can you lose your sense of self? I think our negative sense of self definitely goes down, because what we're trying to do is just form good tendencies in our mind, and we're really focusing on good tendencies and good imprints. So that negative sense of self of, look what I'm doing, I'm special, that sense of self is going to go down, okay? But to really cut from the root the sense of self that is the cause of all of our suffering, for that you need a meditation on the nature of reality. Okay? So that's a different meditation that cuts the root completely.
My question is actually, what is good karma and what is bad karma, and who defines it?
What
is good karma and what is bad karma?
Okay.
And who defines it?
Okay. So what is good karma and bad karma and who defines it? Okay. The Buddha did not make this up. Rather, the Buddha was able to see with his purified mind that when sentient beings experience happiness, it's the result of certain actions. Because the result was happiness, he called the cause virtue, or constructive karma, good karma. When he saw sentient beings experiencing misery, he called the cause, the actions they did that brought that, as virtue, as non-virtuous or destructive or bad karma. Okay? So the Buddha didn't create the system of karma, he just described it. And constructive and destructive, good and bad karma, are become so not because they have some inherent nature, but in relationship to the result that they bring about. Okay? So here we're seeing dependent arising. Things are not inherently good, inherently bad. They become so independent upon the results that they bring. Okay? So the Buddha didn't set down any rules saying, thou shalt not do this and that. Now, the Buddha just explained, if you do this, these results come. If you do that, those results. You're a free individual, you can choose what you want to do. Yeah? But he's instructing us in all these things so that we get some idea about the kinds of things to practice and the kinds of things to avoid. So on a very basic level, what he said to avoid were 10 non-virtuous actions. Taking life, stealing, unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Those three are done with our body. Then 4, verbal or communication, lying, creating disharmony with our words, harsh speech, and idle talk. And then 3 mental ones, coveting other people's possessions, malice, and wrong views. So he said, you know, most people, when they do those 10, have a negative intention and their actions become destructive karma. Yeah? And so just abandoning those 10 becomes constructive karma, as does doing the opposite of those 10. So instead of killing, preserving life, instead of stealing, protecting others' possessions, and so on. Okay, so he described all that to us because sometimes we're spaced out and we don't know what to practice and what to avoid. Okay, so it's very helpful to study these teachings because they give us a good foundation for looking at our own behavior.
You were talking about the collective karma, and in this society, if we have to make any choice, and if it's not completely mine, and if it's being influenced by many other individuals, then even if I want to distance out from that choice, and I cannot. So, what would be the solution?
The result. Okay. So, we're involved with a group of people, and we have to make a choice, but we're also influenced greatly by the situation that other people are in. So what you're saying, if we go along with a destructive choice that the whole group's making, even though we don't want to do it, okay? Still, I mean, it's hard because I would have to know the exact situation, yeah. But in general, I'll just give a few general things. If it's, if somebody's forcing you to do something, like somebody's holding a gun to your head and saying, you either do this or I'm gonna kill you, then, you know, it's clearly, it's involuntary and you're doing it to preserve your life. The karma is gonna be like way, the strength of the karma is way down because you don't really want to do that, you're being forced to, okay? But then there's other situations where we say, I have to do this, but we don't really have to. We are giving way to social pressure or family pressure. We want to please people. And that's not such a good motivation, okay? So, for example, your family wants to get involved in kind of an under-the-table business deal that isn't very honest, and they're pressuring you to join in with them, okay? You have a choice at that point, yeah? If you say no, they may not like it. But you have that choice to say no, and you bear the fact that they're unhappy with you for, you know, because you don't want to get involved in that shady business deal. And I think those situations, it's important that we really live according to our own ethical values and principles and not give way to pressure from other people. You know, because it's not like we really have to. And it's not like the world is going to end if they're unhappy with me, because I'm not doing that.
Isn't making them in a way unhappy or like inflicting?
No, that's the situation I was talking about at the beginning. We're not deliberately making them unhappy. Our purpose is to keep good ethical conduct. They have a choice whether to be unhappy or not. We're not making them unhappy. Their own minds are choosing to be unhappy. So we should not feel guilty and responsible for their unhappiness because that wasn't our intention. If it was our intention, then yes, we created negative karma. But if our intention instead is to keep good ethical conduct, then our action is virtuous and other people are going to be unhappy, and what can you do about it? Because, you know, if we go around our whole lives trying to please other people, first of all, it's impossible to please them all. Whatever you do, they're going to want you to do something more. And you're going to create a ton of negative karma that you will experience the result of, not them. So it's important that we know very clearly what our own ethical values are and that we live according to them. Yeah, because we will experience the result of them. You know, otherwise you could say, you know, in Nazi Germany, well, you know, everybody else was a Nazi, and my family were all Nazis, so if I didn't enroll and become an SS officer, my family would be unhappy with me. So you become an SS officer, and you help in the extermination of a few people. You think that's good karma? Because you made your family happy? That's rotten karma. Yeah, better you should say, no, I'm not going to do that, and let your family be unhappy. We need people in society who stand up for what's right. And that's what Gandhiji did, isn't it? Gandhiji was amazing. Many people were unhappy with him. So what? Yeah. He was doing the right thing because he had, you know, a good intention. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is something that's always confused me. And I don't know whether you'd be able to shed light on it. Which is that when somebody experiences suffering caused by somebody else, be that a community, a population, an individual, then it would be possible for the person who is creating the suffering to divest themselves of responsibility and agency by saying, well, your karmic behavior has brought you to a place where you, as a consequence of what you might have done in a previous life, etc., has meant that you must suffer. So, at what point does agency and responsibility...
So, tell me if I understand. So it's the person that sees somebody else suffering and says, well, you created the negative karma for this, and if I hear you, if I help you, I'm interfering with your karma, and, you know, I should just let you experience the result of your karma. So you just got hit by a car, you're lying in the middle of the street bleeding to death, and I'm just going to walk by because otherwise I'm interfering with your karma, and you should experience the result of your negative karma. So I'll let you bleed to death in the middle of the street.
What I'm saying is actually even worse. So if I'm somebody who is being terrible to somebody, and so I am causing suffering, and then I can, you know, it's possible for me to divulge responsibility and just say, this is not my fault, because you must have done something in your life.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, yes, it's not my fault. You did a negative action. Yeah, so you're that's the principal cause. So my bad intention, my obnoxious motivation to inflict harm on another sentient being has no weight for me. What? You know, that doesn't make any sense. Of course, that person has a rotten intention. They're creating karma right then and there. In addition to the negative karma, because they intentionally want to inflict, harm on somebody else, they're also suffering from wrong views and ignorance by making some cockamamie, you know, excuse for their own bad behavior. Yeah, so they're creating considerable destructive karma.
But I guess the counterpoint to that is that the person who is experiencing the suffering, basically I think my question is all suffering because of something that your soul has done in some lifetime? Or it is possible, Aleppo being an example, you know, babies dying in Aleppo, you know, are we going to attribute that to would that be attributed to the wrongdoing that they're
Yeah, I mean, if we do something with a negative intention and other people experience suffering, they could be experiencing the result of their own negative deeds. But that's not our business. Our business is what we're doing. And our business is we have a rotten, cruel motivation. And we're creating negative karma. And we're rejoicing in somebody else's misery. What kind of human being are we that we rejoice when other people are miserable?
If I might follow up on that question, are we responsible to act on behalf of the baby in Aleppo?
Act on behalf of who? What?
The the babies that are dying in Aleppo?
In
the innocent people that are dying,
okay.
are we responsible to
Are we responsible to act, to do what we can for people in horrible situations? Yeah. I think as human beings, yeah, that we're all involved in some way, and while we may not be able to stop the harm, let's say in Aleppo, we can at least offer some compassion. Maybe we make a donation to an organization that can get food to them from time to time. Maybe we sign petitions about stopping the war. Maybe we just in our meditation practice take on their suffering and send them happiness and send them loving kindness. It's good if we do something to keep our heart open. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that every day we have to think of every single sentient being who's suffering and do that, because then we would never do anything else in the day. Yeah. So when we do our spiritual practice, we often motivate it, you know, for the welfare of all living beings. And we dedicate it for the welfare of all living beings. So in some way, we're keeping our heart related and open to the experience of all these different beings. Okay. But it's difficult to be involved in every single suffering in this world, isn't it? We can't do something about everything, but we can at least keep our heart open. Yeah. I think if we say, oh, that's just too far away, it's too painful, I don't want to think about it, I don't want to see it, then, you know, that attitude on our part is not so good. Okay? Anything else?
About dharma and karma. What if my dharma is contributing to my karma in a negative way, but I still follow my dharma?
You what?
What if I'm following my dharma, and that contributes in a negative way to my karma?
What do you mean following your karmas?
So I'm thinking of what we call ethical action. So what is good for one group of people may be bad for another group of people. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In those situations, what's good for one group, what bad for the other group, you have to think again of your motivation.
So if I'm a soldier and I have to go out to war and kill as many people as I can to follow my dharma.
I don't call that following my karma.
I'm talking about my role in life. My ordained role in life.
Oh, I don't believe in ordained roles in life. Maybe that's the difference.
Okay, so as a family person, I have a role to play in a family.
Yeah.
Which may go completely against my own individual path.
You say that again? You're doing... You have a role to play in a family.
In a family, yeah. As a female, I can say that I have a role to play as a wife and a mother.
Yes.
And I may also have my own individual path.
Individual path.
Which may not be fulfilling the role of a wife and fulfilling the role of a mother.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's an ethical...
What do you mean your own individual path? You mean your own individual
wishes? Maybe I want to become a nun.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that what you're questioning is you're in a situation where there's certain societal expectations of you, and you want to do something else besides what that role entails. That's what you're asking. Okay, now I understand. Thank you for bearing with me. Okay. And then you have to see, again, what's my motivation? Am I wishing to do this because I don't care about a group of people, or I'm being selfish and just thinking about myself? Or am I wanting to do something else because I really feel that, you know, my talents and abilities would be better used for the case of humanity if I did this other job? For example, just, you know, when I became a nun, my parents were very unhappy. Yeah. But I knew that by ordaining and practicing the path, in the long term, I would benefit my parents plus everybody else a lot more than if I had stayed in that situation I was in before and tried to please everybody in it. Yeah. So, but if I had had the motivation of, you know, oh, I'm just sitting here in the family, I'm fed up with it, these people are breathing down my back, I want to get out of here. That's not a very good motivation. Okay? So again, so much comes down to why we want to do something. I mean, the Buddha was before, yeah, he was in a family situation. Some people now, and he left his family to become a wandering mendicant, and, you know, he gained enlightenment by doing that. Some people might look at what the Buddha did and say, oh, he was terrible. He walked out on his wife and child and family. What a horrible person he was. Yeah. But I don't think many people say that about the Buddha, because what he did as a result of leaving his family was something that benefited so many people. And he also knew that his family, while they may suffer a little bit because of his absence, that they would recover and, you know, their life would go on. And as it turned out, his wife ordained, his stepmother ordained, and so on.
My question is, did he know? When he started his journey, did he really know that?
I can't tell you what the Buddha knew or didn't know, but he had definitely a very good motivation for leaving. He wasn't just like, oh, I'm sick of this place, get me out of here. I can't stand my wife, I can't stand my parents, you know. It wasn't that. He was going towards something that was really good. Okay.
Somebody back here.
Okay. Then let's sit and have a 2-minute meditation. Yeah, just to reflect on what we heard, so that we can take it into our hearts and remember it, and really use it in our life to help us in our life. Let's rejoice at the virtue we all created this afternoon by listening and discussing about karma. And rejoice at all the virtue that all sentient beings create in the past, present, and future. Thank you. And thus rejoice also at the virtue of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And let's dedicate all that virtue, all that good karma, so that all living beings can learn about the functioning of karma and its effects. And by following it, may they all create the causes of happiness and abandon the causes of suffering. And even more than that, may they have the aspiration towards spiritual awakening and follow a true path that leads to that for the benefit of each and every living being. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.